Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Hope you'll stick around for as much as you can handle tonight. Scott McClellan, you know who he is, Scotty the Duck, former White House secretary who wrote the book that sharply criticized Bush last spring, told CNN today he's voting for Barack Obama. Scott McClellan is voting for Barack Obama. He was on the new CNN program hosted by D.L. Hewley. And he said, quote, "From the very beginning, I've said I'm going to support the candidate that has the best chance for changing the way Washington works and getting things done. And I will be voting for Barack Obama and clapping." End quote. Really? Clapping. Now, this is not new. He's according to CNN, he's long hinted that he would be that he was leaning toward Obama. And as you know, this is not the first member of Bush's inner circle to say to hell with the Republican Party because it becomes such a sewer. Matt Dowd, who is the former Bush strategist, said he's become disillusioned and that Obama was the only candidate that appealed to him. Of course, it's Colin Powell. And, a number of prominent Republicans have decided that these two candidates for the Republican Party for president, vice president, are just a complete, and I want to say joke, but they're not a joke. It's horrifying what McCain and Palin are doing. Just absolutely astonishing. Oh, by the way, Phoenix Truth Seekers, listen up. Two announcements. First, as you probably already know, you now have a new way to hear Nova M radio programs in the Phoenix area. We are simulcasting not just on KTHX, but also on 1190 AM, which is KNUV. And also, our engineer and associate producer, Ian Huff, will be hosting Unreported News every Sunday, starting this Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Why am I giving Eastern Times here? I'm not sure what time that is in Phoenix, but I guess it's 8 a.m. in Phoenix. So tune in this Sunday, wherever you are in the country. It'll be on 11 a.m. Eastern Time, however that translates in your time zone. Get online if you don't live in the Phoenix area and go to Nova. Go to KPH. Hold on a minute. Ian?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. How do they listen to you? My notes here are just, the cat peed all over everything, and it's just all messed up.
One of two ways, 1480kphx.com, or they can listen on the regular stream link off of NovaMRadio.com.
Oh, okay.
It's the same audio.
Okay. Say it one more time for the people in New Jersey. Who?
Great. 1480kphx.com. KPHX.com or NovaMRadio.com.
All right,
8 a.m. Phoenix time, Sunday mornings.
You got your program all lined up?
Oh, yeah. We got an exciting show lined up for Sunday morning.
Yeah, well, hold on to your sanity. Is this your first time doing I know you were a music jock, but this is and a good music jock, but this is your first time doing talk radio, right?
I filled in for one show of the Equality Arizona show a few months ago.
Oh, big deal.
But this will be my first own hosting. Yes.
This is it.
This is it, yes.
Okay. Well, be scared. Be afraid. Be very afraid. All right.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
All right. Ian Huff, who the latest addition to the lineup at our affiliate, KPHX, here on the Nova M Radio Network. So tune in. Unreported News, 11 a.m. starting this Sunday. 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Phoenix Time. And see what he can do. He's probably sitting there now going, Jesus, God, why is he saying? Robert writes in, Mike, after the right-wing talkers have moaned for literally 4 years on their radio programs about John Edwards' $400 haircut, paid for with campaign funds, did they really expect no one to be angry at the Republican National Committee for spending $150,000 on Sarah Palin's clothing and hair and makeup? Once again, The degree of the Republican hypocrisy is stunningly apparent. It is kind of fun to watch them defend Palin's shopping spree, though. Thank God the Olympics are over. The Republican verbal gymnastics might have threatened China's medal count. The economy has collapsed. U.S. under Bush is a laughingstock. But I'll vote for McCain because I like Palin's $3,000 jacket. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and you heard the latest. I was watching Overman's program right before we went on the air. Some freak was on MSNBC today, one of these right-wing vermin, trying to, once again, find the equivalence between Palin's 150 grand and Barack Obama flying on a big airplane to go visit his gravely ill grandmother. And Sam Cedar was on, too. That's why it caught my eye. I'm like Overman's program, I really do. But, you know, I think the world is Sam. And Sam would just, it was either Sam or Keith, was pointing out that, I think it was Sam, that this clearly, after what McCain said the other night about, quote, women's health. You know, and now this, it clearly indicates that the Republican Party is so far in the sewer. This is the family the party of family values? No. It's not. This is a party of neo-Nazis. This is the party of religious freaks like Sarah Palin. It's the party of people who are clearly on the verge of a complete nervous breakdown, like John McCain. I don't think I've ever seen such a collection of ready to collapse losers in my life. This is the Republican Party. It has sunk to this level. Well, yes, Mike, it certainly has. In that vein, there is a letter circulating on Huffington Post. It was written by Barry Goldwater's granddaughter. Here's what it says. Being Barry Goldwater's granddaughter and living in Arizona, one would assume that I would be voting for our state senator, John McCain. I am still struck by certain dyed-in-the-wool Republicans who are on the fence this election, as it seems like a no-brainer to me. Myself, along with my siblings and cousins, will not be supporting the Republican presidential candidates this year. We believe strongly in what our grandfather stood for: honesty, integrity, personal freedom, free from political maneuverings and fear tactics. Our generation of Goldwaters expects government to provide for constitutional protections. We reject the constant intrusion into our personal lives, along with other crucial policy issues of the McCain-Palin ticket. My grandfather, we used to call him Paca, would never suggest denying a woman's right to choose. My grandmother co-founded Planned Parenthood in Arizona in the 1930s, a cause my grandfather supported. I'm not sure about how he would feel about marriage rights based on same-sex orientation. I think he would feel that love and respect for one's privacy is what matters most, and not the intolerance and poor judgment displayed by McCain over the years. Paca respected our civil liberties and passed on the message that we should conduct our lives standing up for the basic freedoms we hold so dear. For a while, there were several candidates who aligned themselves with the Goldwater version of conservative thought. My grandfather had undying respect for the U.S. Constitution and an understanding of its true meanings. There always have been a glimmer of hope that someday someone would race through the gate full steam in Goldwater style. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened, and the Republican brand has been tarnished in a shameless effort to gain votes and appeal to the lowest emotion, fear. Nothing about McCain, except for maybe a uniform, compares to the same ideology of what Goldwater stood for as a politician. The McCain-Palin plan is to appear diverse and inclusive, using women and minorities to push an agenda that makes us all financially vulnerable, fearful, and less safe. When you see the candidates' political ads, you can't help but be reminded of the 1964 presidential campaign of Johnson Goldwater, the origin of spin that twists the truth and obscures what really matters. Nothing about the Republican ticket offers the hope America needs to regain its standing in the world. That's why we're going to support Barack Obama. I think that Obama has shown his ability and integrity. After the last 8 years, there's a lot of cleanup to do. Roll up your sleeves, Senators Obama and Biden, and we Goldwaters will roll ours up with you. Now, and that was signed by Barry Goldwater's granddaughter. I can't think of a more damning indictment of McCain and Palin than that. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Great job. They're in charge of the United States Senate. So if they want to, they can really get in there with the senators and make a lot of good policy changes that will make life better for Brandon and his family and his classroom.
Oh my God. And that's the Republican nominee for vice president, by the way. It's astonishing. It is. It's just absolutely astonishing. Pray 2 writes, Mike, Alan Greenspan appeared before Congress today and paraphrased a popular line from the movie Casablanca. I'm shocked, shocked that there's gambling. The notion that somebody with 50 years experience would be shocked that if you let banks handle billions of other people's dollars with no oversight, that they might start stealing it, is far more absurd than the Vichy French police chief playing dumb in the middle of the casino. The entire Ponzi scheme of worthless securities created from subprime debt was Greenspan's baby, and he knew exactly what would happen. Greenspan wrote his doctoral thesis on the 1926 housing bubble burst that brought on the 1929 crash. This was the result of the bank selling bonds based on mortgages, worthless bonds, that Hoover bought up in the bank bailout of 1932. Sound familiar? Greenspan also wrote a professional opinion for Keating that John McCain used to justify intervening with regulators, allowing Mr. Keating to keep stealing for 2 years longer. Greenspan's willing participation in the multi-billion dollar SNL fraud was rewarded by making him Fed chairman, where he saw his most important function as controlling wage inflation. Read this as making the middle class into the working poor. The 1%, the top 1%, now own 90% of the wealth, and as trillions evaporate from 401ks and home equity disappears, it's rapidly approaching 100%. We are in the middle of the biggest wealth transfer since the Huns sacked Rome. And Alan Greenspan unlocked the city gate. Prairie 2. And, but you know, spread the wealth around. That's what Barack Obama's talking about. No kidding. He wants to spread the wealth around. Well, that sounds like socialism to me. At least Joe the Plumber thinks it's socialism. What do you think? Do you think it's socialism? He wants to spread the wealth around a little bit. Huh? Jesus H. Christ. Yeah, Greenspan did admit today that his words made a mistake in trusting that so-called free markets could regulate themselves without government oversight. Oh, please. What do you mean you made a mistake, you weaselly son of a bitch? You didn't make a mistake. You knew exactly what you were doing for your friends. For 18 years that he ran the Fed, Greenspan was an absolute opponent of any sort of regulation for anything. He belongs to that neoliberal Chicago School of Economics that says Throw everything in the dirt. Markets will take care of themselves because investors will make sure that they're not getting screwed. tell that to the people that own 401ks or people that own homes or people that had a stock portfolio. You know, the markets are not self-policing. The markets are what they are. And one of the things that they are is a huge casino where people with a lot of money can go gamble. It's cheaper than going to Atlantic City or Las Vegas. It's not a place where sensible decisions are made. The market is completely irrational. We all know that, or we should know that. It is run on emotion. That's why everything is collapsing now. The fact that fear permeates every nook and cranny of Wall Street. Well, there is one other thing, and that is the fear is being generated by the fact that everybody knows that all the wealth, quote, quote, that was created is nothing but smoke. Now, the people who created the smoke somehow managed to withdraw billions before everybody else started choking, realizing it was smoke. And Alan Greenspan says he admits to making a mistake and that he was partially wrong, his word, in not having tried to regulate the market that got involved in these strange things like credit default swaps. He made a mistake. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Down along the factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago. And I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any sleep at night. Just as long as fate is out there busting.
Talk radio right from the left. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Oh, God. What is this? A campaign volunteer for John McCain. Let's see, this is from Associated Press, Pittsburgh. A campaign volunteer for John McCain said she was robbed at knife point at an ATM and knocked down by a man who then carved a B in her face after noticing a sticker for McCain on her car. Police said the woman refused medical attention. An officer saw the injury, but the police report did not describe its size or severity, a police spokeswoman said. The 20-year-old reported the attack last night. She was to be re-interviewed by investigators late today. I wonder why. A spokesman for Pittsburgh police said, quote, "We're looking at all angles at this point." Yeah. The young woman told police she was withdrawing money just before 9 p.m. Wednesday when a man approached her from behind, put a knife to her neck, and demanded money, police said. She gave him $60. She said she gave him $60. The robber then noticed the bumper sticker that said McCain Palin, punched her in the back of the head, knocked her down, and used a knife to carve a B on the right side of her face. The young woman told police. It was unclear what the B was meant to symbolize. The police spokeswoman said the young woman was unfamiliar with her surroundings and was unable to tell police which way the attacker ran. A McCain spokesman confirmed that the woman is a campaign volunteer but declined to comment further. Boom, 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 boom. Police said no police photo had been taken of the woman yesterday, but by today, a purported picture of a woman with a B scratched into her cheek was circulating on the internet. Okay, I'm not laughing about someone who has been attacked. But what was the B for? Stand for? Of course, Obama. Greenspan, in front of the House Committee on Government Oversight and Reform, that's Henry Waxman's committee, said today that he was partially wrong in not having tried to regulate the market. But there was this exchange between Waxman and Greenspan, in which Greenspan conceded a more serious flaw, that unfettered free markets sit at the root of a superior economy. Greenspan said, quote, "I made a mistake in presuming that the self-interests of organizations, specifically banks and others, were such as that they were best capable of protecting their own shareholders and their equity in the firms." Really? Alan, you don't look like a naive, oh, I don't know, 15-year-old. You really don't. You look old and wise and really understand economics. You really thought that someone who had nobody looking over their shoulder, no regulations, no restrictions, no locks on the doors, no sashes on the windows, nothing, and you just give those people billions, hundreds of billions, if not trillions, and they're going to sit there and say, okay, now let me make sure I have all this right. You're kidding me. Referring to his free market ideology, Mr. Greenspan added, quote, "I have found a flaw." I have found a flaw. I don't know how significant or permanent it is, but I've been very distressed by that fact. He found a flaw. The whole goddamn world is collapsing economically, and this freak calls it a flaw? A flaw? Waxman said, he asked Greenspan to clarify his words. Waxman said, quote, "In other words, you found that your view of the world, your ideology was not right. It was not working." And Greenspan replied, "Absolutely, precisely. You know, that's precisely the reason I was shocked. Because I have been going for 40 years or more with very considerable evidence that it was working." Yeah, but you're an expert on how markets collapse. You're an expert on how bogus mortgages used as collateral usually wind up bringing the whole house down. You wrote papers on that, Alan. Well, I had a flaw. In his prepared remarks, before they started questioning, when he was sitting there at the table, Greenspan said that he was in what he called a state of shocked disbelief in the ability about the breakdown in the ability of banks to regulate themselves. Shocked disbelief? Banks? What? You mean these rat bastards that when you overdraw your account, like you've had an account for 5 years and you're unemployed all of a sudden, and you write a check for $26.18, and in your account is $25.18. And not only do these predatory, vulturous bastards bounce your check, which causes untold embarrassment, but they also charge you, what is it now, $35 bounce check? Is it $40, $50? I don't know, because I don't use checks. But it's obscene. And these kinds of predatory institutions are going to regulate themselves and make sure nobody gets screwed? Oh! And what does Greenspan call that sort of thinking? Flawed? He's found a flaw? Gambling? There's gambling going on here at Rick's? No! No! He went on to say that he, quote, "cannot see how we will now be able to avoid a significant rise in layoffs and unemployment." Oh, by the way, consumer spending will decline too. The cavalier attitude of these predatory capitalist vampires is astonishing to me.
Oh, I had a flaw in my thinking. What? How many people have committed suicide so far? Really? How many families are homeless now? Oh, you're kidding me. Oh, isn't that a goddamn shame? Oh. How many people are on the street? Really? How many factories are closing? Oh, and how many markets are tank? Oh, and all those retirement plans in the toilet. Oh, pity. Isn't it a shame? Now, I put all mine in gold.
He added that his thinking, his words, has evolved in the last year. Really? So what's next? I mean, if you look very old and full of death, and I realize you're Andrea Mitchell's husband, and this must put a tremendous strain on her since she works for NBC, but you look so old and just full up with the death spirit. I think the angel is moving toward you, Alan, and you see him, don't you? So what are you going to... There's not enough time left. You oversaw the SNL collapse that sucked off hundreds of billions of dollars from innocent people. Now you have sat in the crow's nest on this debacle that has sucked off trillions of dollars of other people's money. Plus, behind the scenes, you've managed to scam everybody by getting a $1.2 or $2.1 or $6.9 trillion payoff to all the bandits who've done this. What's your next move, Alan? What little thrill ride do you have planned for the American consumer, as Bush likes to call us, next? Huh? Do you think you have time, Alan, before the angel of death comes over and kisses you and sucks your breath into his lungs? What do you think, Alan? How much time do you have left? What are you going to destroy next, you evil son of a bitch?
Well, I had a flaw in my thinking. I made a mistake, and I don't know how significant or permanent it is, but I have been very distressed by that fact. Ask my wife, Andrea. She can no longer go on NBC or MSNBC or NBC and lie. It's upset her terribly.
Christ. Greenspan concedes error on regulation. Error. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Straight to be a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, living in the lap of lazy luxury. Yowie. A guy like me should be so lucky. It's a special club for the privileged few. Not for me, not for you. It's a wonderful life, no stress, no strife, never hurry, never worry like the poor folks do. And oh, it must be fun to be so wealthy, filthy, rich and young. One might wonder what great things they've done to become the fortunate ones. They're the happy members of the Lucky Sperm Club. The only thing they have to do is be conceived. It's great to be a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, living in the lap of lazy luxury.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Always having dirt to play around me.
It's about 10 before the hour. If you read my blog at MikeMalloy.com today, you'll notice at the very end I included an email I got from Scott. in Massachusetts. And what Scott had written was, Mike, the worst thing I can imagine about a possible McCain-Palin administration is this. She'll be the last image burnt into all of our collective consciousnesses, the last thing we see and hear on the way out. Because one day, soon after their inauguration, her image will appear on every channel at once, and she will announce that they've launched a preemptive strike against Russia. And to pray for that, and we should expect retaliation, and to pray for that too, but we will prevail since it is God's will. And then the image will dissolve because, of course, the Pentagon and Washington will be struck first, and we will all cringe and huddle with our families as city after American city flashes into brilliant white light. And the worst thing about it all is she will die never knowing she's wrong. This is not Armageddon. There's no afterlife. And we will die unable to tell her we told you so. Scott. Ah! Spreading the wealth around. As we mentioned, the bank bailout is an example, one of the most massive examples of spreading the wealth around. Socialism comes to the rescue of predatory capitalism. Ain't that a bitch? Also, Mike writes, public funding and private wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Isn't that socialism? Huh? Lack of stock market regulations, stealing from employee pension or saving funds. Isn't that spreading the wealth around a little bit there, huh? And about the last thing for me, we're going to do a lot of phone calls tonight, so you might want to get online. 800-989-1480 has been suggested by the talk radio fairy that we should devote more time to taking some phone calls here for a while. So we're going to do that. Because one thing I do not want is a pissed-off talk radio fairy haunting my dreams. So the number is 800-989-1480. Don't leave me hanging here now. Bob Barr, who he kind of turns my stomach when he was the member of Congress from the 7th District here in Georgia, which is one of the collar counties that make up Metro Atlanta. That was back in the mid-90s. But Barr says, he's running for president now. He's the Libertarian Party nominee for president. And Barr says that John McCain is on his farewell tour across America because, as Barr says, it has become clear that McCain has no realistic chance of winning the presidential election. Barr says, quote, the wheels of the Straight Talk Express have come off. Senator McCain will be spending the last 2 weeks before the election on his farewell tour across America. Senator McCain's mixed and angry message, as well as the support of big spending policies, have killed any chance McCain may have had to win this election. That's the end of the quote. Barr says this means that Republican-leaning voters who are reluctant to vote for McCain, quote, can feel comfortable knowing that their vote for Bob Barr will be a vote for smaller government, less spending, and lower taxes, end quote. Barr went on to say, quote, a vote for John McCain is a wasted vote, end quote. Barr says that McCain, quote, never appealed to the fiscal conservatives because of his record of increasing the size and power of government. John McCain's refusal to stand up against the bailout tore the wheels right off the so-called Straight Talk Express bus. He went on to say, if you want your vote to count and go toward a leader dedicated to lowering taxes, cutting spending, and drastically reducing the size of the government, then you still have a choice in 2008. That choice is Bob Barr, end quote. Whew. Really, Bob? Well, I'm glad he's running. I really am, because that means that Barack Obama probably has a chance to take Georgia, even when you consider the theft of votes that is ongoing, even as we speak. Almost three quarters of a million Georgians have voted so far in the early voting. And one can guess that probably 10% of those votes, the ones that were 10% of the votes cast for the Democratic nominee have been flipped to McCain. And also a good 10% of the votes for this pig Saxby Chambliss, who has been the senator here for the past almost 6 years, he's going down in defeat. Jim Martin, his Democratic opponent, you can bet that probably 10% of his votes have been flipped to Saxby Chambliss. Saxby was the pig who superimposed a picture of Osama bin Laden over Max Cleland, who was our senator here. Cleland, of course, a Vietnam vet, triple amputee. And since I live in Georgia, you know, we have Atlanta, and then we have the, except for pockets of rationality and liberalism, the rest of the state is pretty much a two-holer that's almost full. So it was relatively easy for Saxby, who is a redneck from south central Georgia, to convince the two-holer thinkers here that,
yeah, you know what? Yeah. Oh, damn it, Max Cleland does look a lot like Brock Osama. What's his name? Osama bin Laden. He sure does. Yeah. And you know what? He didn't really lose two legs and an arm. He didn't lose all that in Vietnam. No, he lost that when he was, gambling. Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket. He was gambling somewhere and didn't pay his debt, and some good old boys whipped his ass. That's what happened.
Those are the people who voted for Saxby Chambliss and gave him Max Cleland's seat in the U.S. Senate. So maybe Jim Martin is going to show Saxby what it feels like to have a new body orifice carved for you. We'll be back. Stick around. We're going to take your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 7 before the hour, email here from Todd in Mundelein, Illinois, who says, where's the new Malloy Uncensored Mailbag video? He writes, I heard last night that you said it was going to be up today. I just checked, and there still isn't a new one. I don't know. How do we find out? Huh? Let's ask our engineer. Hey, Ian.
Hi, Mike.
God, twice tonight.
Yeah, this is a heck of a deal.
Yeah.
Ben Birch is handling that. I would expect it by the weekend. Fortunately, there was another show that we handle here at the network that had a website problem today, and it was a priority considering of that show, so we had to focus on that.
Oh, okay.
So we hopefully will have that new video that you've sent in up available over the weekend.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Another show at the network. Let me see. There's only one other show. Oh, it must be Randy Rhodes.
Oh, that was the priority, huh? Little website problem with Randy Rhodes. Well, Malloy can just sit back on his ass and wait.
Well, I guess that's the nature of the universe. That's the proper order, right? All right, Todd, you heard him, so it'll be up. Yeah, it'll be up. It will be up. And you're going to like this one, too. Very quick here. This is from Alexander, somewhere in Central Europe. Mike, didn't some Japanese head of Japanese economic policy resign and even did the appropriate honorable thing by falling on his blade? Maybe Alan Greenspan should finally get a clue and resign and do the same. The ancient honorable ritual of harakiri. Yeah, that would be nice.
Well, with Andrea Mitchell, he's already falling on something sharp most evenings.
Yeah, well, that's probably true. Now, Kathy, don't get your cat up. Oh, and Diane in Pittsburgh, this is the last one, then to your phone calls, regarding the the girl who says she was attacked at an ATM and a bee carved in her face. Diane writes, Mike, the story sounds fishy to me. The report I heard said the attacker first said, I'm going to teach you a lesson, before he carved the bee in his face, in her face. Yeah, that sounds credible. However, it didn't appear to be a particularly bad wound, and she was going to be fine. Oh, okay, Diane. We also got an email from regarding that. This is from, who's this from? Well, she, Star Juice? Okay. Mike, I'm writing from London, 5 hours ahead of you, and you are single-handedly responsible for wrecking my body clock. My life is a mess, but I'm aware. Anyway, he sent me a picture from Michelle Malkin's website, of all people, the right-wing screaming freak. And Michelle Malkin has a picture of this young woman up on her website with a bee carved, scratched into her face like somebody took a safety pin. And you know, want to know the weird part? Even this right-wing harridan, Michelle Malkin, says, I don't think so. She writes, throughout my career, I've covered dozens of fake hate crimes, campus hate crime hoaxes, Muslim hate crime hoaxes, fake noose hangings, yada yada. Most were perpetrated by liberals. But there have been some shameful ones on our side of the aisle as well. She says, which is why I'm not jumping up and down with outrage over the drudge-promoted story of a McCain volunteer claiming to have been attacked by, oh, I didn't get this part, by a black man whom she accused of carving a bee in her face after spotting her McCain bumper sticker. She refused medical treatment. Why on earth would she do that? And there's a picture of this poor girl. And if you look at the picture, yeah, there's a bee on her face. And Michelle, like a safety pin, and Michelle writes, what's wrong with the bee? Well, you'll notice the bee is backward on the right cheek. If you were looking in a mirror and put it on your own face, it would appear backward. It would probably be on your own right cheek due to the fact that most folks are right-handed. She put it on her own face, but forgot it would show up backwards. She may have been robbed and beaten, but I think she added the B. And Michelle writes, maybe the alleged robber straddled her upside down while carving it into her face. Maybe. But I've got my doubts. The woman has been identified as GOP volunteer Ashley Todd of Texas. Her Twitter page is here, and she hyperlinks it, and I find it, well, odd. She goes on, I can't believe I'm quoting Michelle Malkin. Oh, my God, wash my mouth out with soap. Well, that's because Star Juice sent it. Oh, well. Yeah, if you see the picture, it's, I don't know what it is. And last one, and then your phone calls. This comes from Dartmouth College. Department of Earth Sciences from JS. Regarding criminal enterprise, JS writes, Greenspan is just part of a criminal enterprise. We have been under the influence of folks who are worse than the Gambino crime family. Mike, the Republican Party is a criminal enterprise. Consider vote suppression, stealing money from poor middle class to enrich their wealthy donors, strong-arm fear tactics, lying under oath, fraud and double-dealing with taxpayers' money. A criminal enterprise propped up by the frightened snake worshippers and idol worshippers who fear science and rational thought. Yeah, I think so. The McCain campaign, though, really, the speeches and everything, aren't they getting pathetic? I mean, this is almost painful to watch. I've never been one to turn my face away from a Republican train wreck. As a matter of fact, I find it a little bit enjoyable, you know, when you see a bunch of Republicans with a political train wreck, and metaphorically, their teeth, hair, and eyeballs all over the pavement. But this one, this train wreck, and by that I'm referring to like the resignation of Dick Nixon, that's a good example, or Alexander Haig when Reagan was shot saying, I'm in charge here. No, you're not, you ass. Sit down. It's fun. It's fun to watch. Fun to watch Republican train wrecks. And but McCain's train wreck with this shrill hoe from Wasilla, whom the pimp McCain is pimping to just about anyone who will have her at this point. This is really, really bad. He's even dressed her up now. This is so bad. You talk about somebody who is a misogynistic freak, taking this poor, ignorant hillbilly from Alaska and pimping her like this. Ah, McCain, you have no honor at all. So it's becoming painful to watch this and to watch the poor killer from Wasilla trying to keep her game face on, trying to, you know, continue to play along as though she is the great female hope and white of the Republican Party, that she is, you know, she's been sent by Jeebus or somebody, and God is going to do this, and God is going to do that. In the meantime, the preacher from wherever, was it Kenya? Was it, I don't know where it was, some country in Africa, is going to keep the witches away. And Jesus, God. Next thing you know, she'll be tying up her hair in little twists to keep the haints away, too. It's just unbelievable stuff. And it's not, I don't know, it's just sort of sad. It's becoming sad. I want them all to disappear into the two-holer that they have built that is now the Republican. What, two-holer? You don't know what a two-holer is? You know what it is, don't you, Kathy? Yeah, you're from the South. Of course you do. I just want them all to, you know, go in there, in the little house with the crescent moon on the outside, and sit down in the two-holer and just sink and disappear. Just go away. But take the entire Republican Party with you. This is good. This is wonderful. But still, watching John McCain, knowing full well that he's a war criminal, knowing full well he's a coward, knowing full well he's a sneak and a liar, watching him flap his little stubby arms as he mounts the stage, and, you know, his long-legged hoe coming up behind him, and, you know, the pimp stands up there and the hoe stands over there in her new duds. That's what a pimp does. You know, he clothes the hoe. He dresses her up. He smears lipstick on her face. He buys her 4-inch spiked heels and fishnet stockings. And he says, now get out there and do some business.
Always sunny in the rich man's world. Uh-huh. All the things I could do. If I had a little money, it's a rich man's world.
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas, listening on the internet. Hey, Matthew, haven't heard from you for a while. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
Good.
God, it's been so long.
Yeah, you were in Japan?
I was, 4 months.
Yeah, how was that?
Well, on the better half, it was good to get away from the American political system, but on the lesser half, I was kind of behind the times, and, you know, I didn't get to listen to you live, mostly because you were a morning show over there.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know, I got to tell you, the Japanese take on this, and interestingly enough, they do have a take, actually is maybe not as scary as probably the truth, but, man, when they have these little parodies that they do, they have this just ancient-looking old Japanese guy who just mutters incoherently to himself,
mm-hmm.
and this just big, bubbly-eyed, little smiling Japanese girl who can, from what I could understand from my limited knowledge of Japanese, just couldn't complete a sentence. And this is
McCain and Palin.
Yeah, this is McCain and Palin. Interestingly, For the reenactment, they did have a black guy doing Obama, which was pretty interesting to me.
A black Japanese?
No. I mean, they have a lot of expatriates there. So,
hey, say, can you speak a little Japanese for us?
Sarah Palin song, Sabushi Dana. That is, Sarah Palin is clueless.
Does the Japanese language use, like, Chinese inflection on certain words, or is it all kind of, you know, tonal qualities on...
Not really. It's surprising because it was easier. I mean, when I was younger, I tried to learn Chinese because I was an idiot, and I thought it would be easy. It was impossible. Japanese is a lot easier, mostly because the wording and sentence structure is somewhat similar to the American, or rather the English language in certain respects.
Like subject, verb, object, kind of that basic sentence structure?
Actually, it's more like verb, object, subject. But it's still in a good pattern. But anyway, you had actually become a pretty well-known in the household I was staying at. I was living with a host family. And, of course, I listened to you via the Novam Founders Club. You know, that really did come in handy.
Yes, it did.
And it's interesting because my host siblings came up with nicknames for the people I watched and listened to. I mean, I watched Olbermann, so they called him Orobuman.
Uh-huh.
And they actually called you, they gave the nickname Abu Naisan, which means dangerous. Because, you know, they heard you yelling a lot. But you know what? They actually did love you. I had one of my siblings who could understand English, and she just thought you were the funniest thing in the world. So.
And what is the Japanese translation of dangerous?
Abunai.
Abunai.
It means unsafe. So.
Unsafe. Abunai. Unsafe.
Or watch out. People usually use that for, you know, watch out. Like, there's a car coming. Abunai!
Oh,
so,
okay.
But, you know, it's really disorienting being back in this country, I got to admit. I've only been here for about 3 hours now.
Oh, so, really? You just got off the plane and called here?
Yeah, pretty well. I've been purging my lungs with the 15-hour-old air, which is why I have this lovely smoker's voice right now. Wonderful. But, you know, I had several things on my checklist. First get in, you know, sit down, then pry my dogs off my face because
right.
they were just ecstatic.
I'll bet.
Try to get all the germs and crap from the airplane off of me and, hey,
right.
call Mike Malloy because, you know, it's one of those things that I always enjoy doing before, and it's great listening to
well,
you.
Well, that's good, Matthew. You have been well indoctrinated. You've been listening since you were, what, 13?
Actually, I didn't know it, but apparently I had been listening to you when I was, like, 6 or 7 when you weren't even mainstream because
my
aunt would listen
God.
To you. But I've been consciously listening to you since I was about 13, yes.
Yeah. Well, and it hasn't really corrupted your life. Not well, you don't know.
Are you kidding me? I'm a wreck. I'm a total wreck, but I love it because, you know, hey, at least I'm not naive or anything like that. I always hate it when people are like, oh, you know, well, you kind of give them some credit. No, you don't give them credit.
Yeah,
you
that's
kick
true.
Him in the face, and you keep kicking him, and keep kicking, you know.
And, until they stop breathing, right? Well, your body clock, your internal clock now says it must be about what 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, huh?
Exactly. So I'm kind of awake-ish now.
Yeah,
but
you sound like you've been doing just an abundance of methamphetamines or something.
Actually, abundance of caffeine-based drinks.
There you go. All right, well, listen, now that you're back, we're coming up on a break here, Matthew, as you
okay.
know. Now that we're back, call in once in a while, okay?
Will do.
And if the spirit moves you, send me an email, and just in, you know, 500 words or 200 words or less, let me know how your trip was.
Oh, will do.
All right, thanks, Matthew.
Take care, Mike.
All right, you too. All right, we'll be back after the break. Do stay with it. Matthew started calling in way back when we used to do the youth night when he was like 13. What is he now, about 40? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Oh, Mary Jane, she step on a train and find the city light. Get it inside, swim with the tide and taste it. She don't mind the late night radio.
think actually the spending in the war might help with jobs because we're buying equipment and people are working. I think this economy is down because we built too many houses.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right, I can't believe this, but I got a spate of emails of people wanting to know what the hell I was talking about with the two-holer. So Roz, was it Roz? I think Roz sent this in. This is entitled, you're just gonna have to bear with me here, so to speak. This is entitled, The House Behind the House. One of my fondest memories as I recall the days of yore was the little house behind the house with a crescent over the door. 'Twas a place to sit and ponder with your head all bowed down low, knowing that you wouldn't be there if you didn't have to go. Ours was a multi-holer, three, with a size for everyone. You left there feeling better after your job was done. You had to make those frequent trips in snow, rain, sleet, or fog to that little house where you usually found the Sears Roebuck catalog. Oft times in dead of winter, the seat was spread with snow. 'Twas then with much reluctance to that little house you'd go. With a swish you'd clear that wooden seat, bend low with dreadful fear. You'd shut your eyes and grit your teeth as you settled on your rear. I recall the day old granddad, who stayed with us one summer, made a trip out to that little house, which proved to be a bummer. 'Twas the day that my dad had finished painting the kitchen green. He'd just cleaned up the mess he'd made with rags and gasoline. He tossed the rags down that hole and went on his usual way, not knowing that by doing so he'd eventually rue the day. Now, granddad had an urgent call I never will forget. This trip he made to the little house stays in my memory yet. He sat down on the wooden seat with both feet on the floor. He filled his pipe and tamped it down and struck a match on the outhouse door. He lit the pipe, and sure enough, it soon began to glow. He slowly raised his rear a bit and tossed the flaming match below. The blast that followed, I am told, was heard for miles around, and there was poor old granddad sprawled out there on the ground. The smoldering pipe still in his mouth, his eyes were shut real tight, and the celebrated three-holer was blown clear out of sight. We asked him what had happened. What he said, I'll never forget. He said he thought it must have been the pinto beans he ate. Next day we had a new one. Dad put it up with ease, but this one had a door sign that read, "No smoking, please." Now, that's the story's end, my friend, of memories long ago when we went to the house behind the house because we had to go. Okay, everybody who sent me those emails, emails now, you know what a two-holer, this was a three-holer. God. Thanks, Ross. Back to your phone calls. Jim is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how we doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, it's so great to speak with you. You know, I actually, I'd like to talk about something that'll take a little time, because I got to go through it. And then I'd like to hear your opinion on it, because some
sure.
of my, you know, okay, so I'll give you a little bit of my background. I'm not like, you know, that guy you were talking about that can't speak English too well. Have a PhD out of Berkeley in chemistry. I started a number of biotech companies here in Madison, and I have never been a Democrat or a Republican, and I don't feel this country really in any way whatsoever has a party for me. But I got a robocall tonight, and of course, because, you know, I'm not a Republican or Democrat, I get them from both sides, but this one was from McCain, and he was saying that our national security interests are going to be gravely threatened if Obama becomes president. So then I heard, the reason why I'm calling in, because I heard this this caller call in about Palin possibly blowing up the world.
Right. Well, that was an email someone sent me, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, so So I've always thought, you know, okay, so who do you vote for? Because I'm, you know, I'm American. I think it's important to vote.
Right.
So typically, as you, I'm sure, do, you vote for the less of two evils. So, you know, I'll go ahead and get in there and I'll pull for Obama. But, you know, there's this part of me that's always said, hey, why not just let the whole country go to until there's a
recession? No, wait, wait, wait. You can't, Jim.
Oh, Jim.
You have to watch your language just a little bit. I've said this a million times. A lot of people who listen to us on Sirius or XM think that that's where the program is originating, and it's not. We're over the air. So there are certain words you can get away with saying, but that's not one of them. And of course, you were listening on the mic, so I'm sure it was just a slip. That's right, Jim. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Maybe it was the topic, the poem right before your call. So we'll talk again. It's just that we have to watch. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. The show's on late in the evening here in the East. And, you know, where the program originates, it's not late in the evening on the West Coast, but we do have a list of words that we're not allowed to say on the air, and that happened to be one of them. So I apologize for having to hang up, but because I'd like to hear what you had to say.
Got another poem you'd like to share?
No, I don't. I don't have.
Maybe one that works in the F word somehow.
No. I don't have any. I don't have a poem. All right, back to your phone calls. Rad is listening in Virginia on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Rad.
Hey, Mike. How are you, comrade?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm pretty darn good, but I'll tell you, I'm pretty fed up. I've been living in the States now for about 5 years. And, boy, you guys got a country that's in a real mess. People that are concerned about all the wrong things. And I'm originally from Canada, and I can't believe the difference. I always thought that people would be about the same here as they were in Canada.
What's the major difference that you find?
I find that the people here are very close-minded, ignorant, arrogant, not educated. They just look at what's best, what they think is in their best interest, but they really can't see the big picture. And, you know, the Democrats and the religious right, my wife happens to be one of those religious people who thinks that everything is in God's hands. And you had mentioned, I believe it was last night, he mentioned Karl Marx, and he said that religion was the opiate of the masses, and he was right on about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody's afraid of socialism, and I'll tell you, even Canada, it's mildly socialistic, and it works a lot better, but I really don't see that, you know, humanity is going to have any other chance but to become more socialist.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
how do you convey these thoughts? Like, I mean, I'm a truck driver. And I try to engage in some conversation with people at the truck stop, but they look at me like, you know, like I'm a threat in some way. And it's like, that's anti-American. And I said, well, I don't understand what America is then. Mm-hmm. Is it just about greed and throwing bombs on people and protecting their capital? But I see that you guys can't even protect, well, not you guys, don't take me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't mean you
right.
personally, but America can't seem to get a grasp that capitalism, it's a failure.
Well, you know, this has its historical ups and downs in this country, the greed scam, but it had its latest launching during the Reagan years in the mid '80s. As a matter of fact,
I remember it.
Yeah, there was a movie out back then called Wall Street, where the main character made his famous speech about greed is good, and a lot of people took, even though it was a movie, a film, a lot of people took that literally, and. What has happened in this country, you know, Leonard Cohen, who's a Canadian and a songwriter, said it well for me. He said, I love the country, referring to the United States. He said, I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I agree with that. And I hear you loud and clear. You'd be surprised how many Americans agree with you that This country, if it ever knew its way, has completely lost its way. And I think at one time we probably had some good ideas that, had they been allowed to come to fruition, would have put this country in a real leadership position, which it is not any longer in. The only reason we've been a leader for the past 60 years is because we had the most atom bombs.
That's right.
And the rest of the world was terrified that we might, even the Russians were terrified that we might go berserk and start tossing these bombs around. So everybody behaved according to America's directives. And all of a sudden, that's just not true anymore, because this country is bankrupt financially, and certainly close to being bankrupt morally and ethically. So I hope, Rad, that we can pull out of this. I really do. I'm an American strictly by the accident of where I was born. I didn't choose to come here. I'm here. And rather than cut and run, I think what I should do is try to stay and stay and try to clean up the mess that these filthy, disgusting, piggish conservatives have handed to me.
Take off, eh?
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It is 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. We have two open lines. Come on, y'all. 800-989-1480. Nelson is calling from L.A., listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Nelson. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on, man.
Sure, sure.
Impeccable poem reading skills. Just like,
yeah, that was great. Yeah.
Mike, one quick point before I get to my main point, I promise that's quick. You know how Palin said that it's in God's hands, the election.
Yeah.
I kind of have some advice for maybe the Bible-toting reps, maybe, or the righties. Maybe they can go and stay home and let God handle it.
That's true. All the religious right should do that. If God really wants Palin and McCain to be president, no votes required.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. But my main issue was with our friend in Philly, our little attack victim there. It's scary. You know, I'm sometimes on FoxNews.com because I'm a glutton like that, and I read the posts that the comments people say, and it's amazing that the hate that this type of thing instills in people. You know, people say that they're afraid of black supporters now, and there was a one man that posted he that the man was a black supremacist that attacked, where it was completely fabricated in every way.
All right, you're talking about the story in Pittsburgh.
The woman with our little girl with the bee on her,
who scratched a bee on her face. Apparently, even a right wing freak like Michelle Malkin is suggesting that this young woman did it to herself.
Yeah, the story screams fabricated in every sense of the word, but. The scary thing is that you know, some of the far righties, they cling to this and they use it to fuel their hatred. You know, I mean, people are saying that they're scared to have put bumper stickers on their cars now because they think that this is what a typical, and I am quoting when they say typical, Barack Obama supporter is.
Well,
it's absolutely amazing.
You know, the only thing I can say about that, Nelson, is that white people in this country. As a group, now I'm not talking about individual cases, I'm generalizing here, and generalizations, for the most part, are usually crazy. See, I'm using a generalization to define a generalization. That's beautiful, but I'll do it anyway. Generalizations are usually worthless. Having said that, here's a generalization. Most white people in this country are really screwed up, really, really crazy where it concerns race. I mean, just totally bonkers, absolutely stupefyingly insane where it concerns race. That's just a given. And part of that, many reasons, but part of it is the collective consciousness, the Jungian thing that white people are stuck with from the fact that we enslaved an entire race of people for a couple 300 years before a million of us had to die to end it. So, there's that dynamic, that psychodrama going on in the head of every white person. But white people in this country are pretty much crazy. You have to understand that every single white person in this country, excuse me, the descendants or the antecedents of every single white person in this country came from somewhere else. There are a lot of white people who have been born in this country, but if you track back far enough, you find that every white person in America is an immigrant. Now, that's not necessarily true of every black person. If you do a little racial, anthropological, what's the word I'm looking for, Kathy? Studies. I'm getting over my head here. But you'll find that not all black folk have to accept the fact that all of their ancestors or antecedents were brought to this country. So given all that nonsense, white people in this country are really kind of insane. We learn how to suppress it or deal with it, but it leaks out. It leaks out when someone says, "Ooh, did you see that story that Matt Drudge has out there about that poor white woman who was attacked by a black man when she was getting money out of the ATM and he carved a B in her face?" What does the B stand for? Obama. But Obama starts with an O. Look. It is very difficult being white and staying sane in America, just like it's very difficult in being black and not having high blood pressure. You know, I mean, we've really made a mess of each other, white folks and black folks. We really have. And all the misunderstanding, all the mistrust or distrust, all the stereotyping. You know, black folk will tell you, well, white folk are crazy. White people will tell you, well, black folk are thugs. Some white people say, well, white people are crazy. Some black people say, well, black folks are being driven insane. I mean, it's a mess. It really is. I don't know if we're ever going to overcome this. I really don't. There are people in this country who are categorically, absolutely, murderously insane. And they are the ones like this little piece of human waste, Matt Drudge, who has this website where he gets 47 billion hits an hour, and he puts stuff out there about, oh, look, oh, it's some black power advocate who attacked this poor little white woman who is standing just get her money out the machine. You know, and then the crazy white people go, oh, scared, scared, scared. Ooh, fear, fear, fear. Ooh, I ain't voting for the black man. Wait till we find out that this poor woman with the black eye and the B scratched into her face with a straight pin. Wait till we find out that she's a paid, not a McCain canvasser or telemarketer, but she's a paid member, probably paid by Karl Rove, to do this so that just this would happen. That more white people will go, oh, Lord, woo, the Negroes are coming. The Negroes are coming. Yow! Woo, run! Pooka pooka! Let me out of here! Ah!
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Oh, looky this. Looky this. Sarah Palin has given an interview to the Chicago Tribune, which the other day, for the first time in its, 158-year history or something like that, has endorsed a Democrat for president, Barack Obama. But anyway, in this interview with the Chicago Tribune, she insists that she did not accept $150,000 worth of designer clothes from the Republican Party. And, quote, "That's not who we are." She said, "This whole thing is just bad. Oh, if people only knew how frugal we are. It's kind of painful to be criticized for something when all the facts are not out there and are not reported." Palin said the clothes are not worth $150,000 and were bought for the Republican National Convention. Still, she has been wearing pricey clothes at campaign events this fall. She said they'll be given back, auctioned off, or sent to charity. Most of them, she said, are still in her airplane, her campaign plane. Oh, God. I can't believe this woman. I really can't. Polls are suggesting, according to the Tribune, that McCain is in trouble, partly because of Palin, who has been criticized as, oh, here's a surprise, lacking the experience to become president, which, in fact, is the only duty or the only obligation that the vice president has other than breaking ties in the Senate. But, of course, she doesn't know that. According to the Tribune, this week's NBC Wall Street Journal poll suggested more people now think that Palin is hurting McCain's chances of becoming president than Bush. And Bush's approval ratings are in the 20s. Palin disputes those conclusions. She said, "I think that those reporters asking those questions should come to some of our rallies and ask some in the crowd why it is they are enthused. You know, the crowd see me as representing hardworking, everyday American families." Oh, my God. And she's going to give a policy speech tomorrow. And she'll lay out the campaign's plans to fully fund the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Oh, well, that'll get the economy moving again. That will boost funding for special needs children from birth to age 3. Wow, why only to age 3? And allow parents to choose whether federal money for their child is used in a public, private, religious, or secular school without navigating a cumbersome administrative process. Oh, I get it. This is more of that faith-based waste, right? Let me see what else. The McCain campaign plans to phase in the money needed, approximately $26 billion a year. With an extra $3 billion a year over 5 years, McCain has called for a domestic discretionary spending freeze, but programs for disabled people would be exempt. Palin said, quote, "It's not all about the money. It's not all about budgets," adding vaguely that the money could come from, quote, "reprioritizing the budget," end quote. Oh, my God. It goes on. In the Chicago Tribune, you can get to them online, chicagotribune.com. If you like. Thanks to Nancy in Ohio for sending that. She's going to have her first policy speech tomorrow. Oh, goody. Back to your phone calls. Hollis is calling from the mic, or from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hello, Hollis.
Hello. I had a couple questions for you, Mike.
Okay.
Do you think the $150,000 shopping spree is the Republican way to introduce Palin to the way real Americans live?
No.
Do you think that now that Greenspan has admitted that his economic thinking was flawed,
yeah,
John McCain should denounce him as his economic guru?
Yes.
So That's all I wanted to know. Thank you much.
Okay, you bet, Hollis. Is that it? That's all the questions Hollis had? Okay. Next. Andrew is calling from California, listening on KTLK in L.A. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's just rocking and rolling.
Right on, right on. Well, I was calling. This is actually my first time calling into the show, and, you know, I just wanted to put a little bit of a positive spin on everything. I know how much negative talk and how much hatred and vitriol has been coming from the conservative side of the campaign, and I'm part of the much younger generation. This is only the second election I'm eligible to vote in, and it really gets me fired up when I hear all this negativity, all this hatred, all this division. And I just wanted to point out, I actually come from a very conservative, very Republican family. Grew up in Orange County, California. It's a fairly wealthy area, obviously. And my entire family, grandparents, even the majority of my aunts and uncles, parents, are all pretty much voting for Obama. And I think that we underestimate just how many people he's able to reach. I mean, years ago during the O.J. Simpson trial, I heard nothing but racial slurs from my grandparents, who are, you know, very much the old conservative Republican guard. And over the last 10 years, it seems something has happened, and maybe just Obama himself, but he has reached out to them, and they have changed their mind and are willing to vote for a black person for president, despite all of their upbringing and despite all of their racial prejudices that they've carried with them for the majority of their lives. And I think it really speaks to how many people he is able to reach, and I think it really speaks to the change that we're looking for. The younger generation's coming out in full force. Minorities are going to come out in full force, and I think we really have the potential to make this not as close as everyone would like to believe it is. I think we can really blow this thing out, depending on how much voter turnout we can really get out there. So,
yeah, those are good and valid observations. Let me ask you something, Andrew. In your generation, your age group, what is the this may be too vague of a question, but I'll try it anyway. What is the overall attitude about race? My generation is what you just described. White people in this country, in my generation, were all brought up, not always by their parents, but they were brought up to be racist. I mean, that's just the way the society was designed over the past 50 years. So what is your generation about where it concerns race?
I think with each generation, it's getting progressively less. I know that our generation has certainly not wiped race out of the question, and there are many people in my generation who do still hold those racial prejudices, and probably there are people in my generation who won't vote for Obama because of that, but I believe that that number is becoming increasingly less. I know despite my grandparents' prejudices, I was brought up in a very race-free environment, in the sense that it doesn't affect my decision-making process at all. And the vast majority of my friends, who are, you know, anywhere from age 20 to 30, all feel the same way about that. None of us really see color lines anymore. The reason we vote for Obama is because when you listen to the two candidates, one obviously makes more sense than the other.
Right.
One is obviously more coherent and obviously has a better plan to get this country moving in the right direction, and we just relate more to that. And also the message. You know, people have talked about it all the time. There's one side that has a message of divisiveness and a message of us against them, and the other side has a message of we all need to come together and we all need to work towards a common goal. And I think my generation very, very, very much relates to that message, to the let's bring everybody together, let's all work at this together, and let's make this world a better place for everybody.
Well, that's some good points, Andrew. Thank you. I'm glad you called in. I do appreciate it. Thanks, pal. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Big black cloud hanging over. Super.
life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. You know, Andrew, last caller, made a pretty good point about of the two candidates, Barack Obama's policies and his points of view and his political expertise, all taken together, is the reason to vote for him. And I think that's incredibly blatantly obvious. The fact that he is a transformational figure because he is has a black father and a white mother is a whole different narrative, but it's an important one because Barack Obama, in addition to having the presence and the youth and obviously the mind to be the president of the United States. He also is representative, or represents, I should say. He's representational. Is that the right of what could be one of those moments in American history that will be seen as a transformational. That's what I'm trying to say. The rest of the world is already saying this. They're astonished, first of all. And this matters. It matters what the rest of the world thinks of the United States. It matters. Especially after 8 years of what this Bush crime family has done to us. Not one, you know, I'm not going to get back on that soapbox because he's history, but not one single thing has come from the Bush crime family in 8 years that can be seen as progressive or benefiting the majority of the American public, or even a plurality of the American public. It's astonishing. I've had this open invitation to any conservative, Republican, or right-winger, wherever you fall on that spectrum, to call this program. I've been saying this for 3.5 years. Call this program. Tell me one thing, one program, one thing George W. Bush or the Bush crime family has done that benefits this country, and by extension, benefits the planet, the rest of anybody. It's not there. There's nothing there. Now, again, Barack Obama is not a liberal, but maybe at this point in our history, he doesn't need to be. he doesn't need to be a liberal. I know all the arguments. I've made some of them about Barack Obama, against Barack Obama. I understand. Sure. But that argument not to let the perfect get in the way of the good, or however that goes, may be apropos in this particular time in this country's history. But the rest of the world, so to speak, put quotes around that, the rest of the world, quote, is astonished that A, he has become the nominee of a major political party, and B, there's a very good chance he's going to be elected president. What? A black man in racist America? What? You're kidding. Especially after what the rest of the world has experienced from this filthy administration run by George Bush and Dick Cheney ever since September 12th, 2001. A day after this country was attacked, and join the ranks of those countries that have experienced death of its citizens as a result of a terrorist attack. And that includes just about everybody, doesn't it? Except us at the time. I mean, tell me a country where there has never been a terrorist attack, where people have died. I'm sure they exist, but tell me one. And the outpouring of empathy, not just sympathy, but empathy. All of a sudden, United States was in that league. And other countries around the planet could say, hey, we know, we understand. And without being cute, they were able to say, legitimately, we feel your pain. And what was the response from the Bush crime family? Just treating people with an assy kind of arrogance, treating other nations, people who are willing to help, just more or less giving them all the middle finger and invading first Afghanistan and then Iraq. And just telling the rest of the world, go screw yourself. Now, in the family of nations, no matter how fractured that family is, if you do that, they're you know, words have meanings, actions have consequences, some intended, some unintended. And with the Bush crime family, you never know. Were they intending for the rest of the world to hate us? Or was that an unintended consequence? It really doesn't matter in the big scheme of things. For the most part, the rest of the world sees us as a sick, wounded, dying society of greedy, murderous, warmongering imperialists. How's that, huh? So the transformational aspect of Barack Obama's presidency, among other things, could be a reestablishing of our place, not at the head of the family of nations, but at least at the table. You think?
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. New York Times has got their lead editorial for tomorrow online now, where they endorse Barack Obama for president. And it is, as can be imagined, a lengthy editorial endorsement. What does this make now? How many hundreds of newspapers have endorsed Barack Obama? It's worth a read. Back to your phone calls before you all get bored and leave. Eileen is calling from Flagstaff, Arizona, listening on Sirius. Is it Eileen?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm just peachy. Glad I finally got through.
You're peachy?
Yeah.
Okay.
This whole election has been very educational for me. Before this election, I was pretty politically stupid.
Uh-huh.
So I've learned a lot through all the Serious Left talk shows. I'm a truck driver, so that's all I listen to.
Uh-huh.
But I got to thinking about, you know, how we could boost the economy. Just send Sarah Palin shopping. It sounded like a good one to me anyway.
Wouldn't you like to have, I know I would, I would love to have $150,000 that I had gotten through labor, not that I'd gotten through some scurrilous means like stealing it or making it as interest or making money on it, but you know, through labor. Like if I were really, really a hard worker and I dug enough ditches where all of a sudden I had $150,000 and I didn't have any bills to pay, didn't have any folks to take care of, and I take that $150,000 and go spend it on clothes. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be fun. But see, we're Democrats, so therefore we're always going to be taking care of someone.
Oh.
That's the difference between us and the left side.
Yeah, but that's why...
Or the right side, I'm sorry.
That's why I heavily qualified it by saying, you know, hard labor, I made the money, off the sweat and use of my body. So it's my money. I made it. And then, that could be a lot of fun. That could be a lot
of
fun.
Yeah, it could be fun. It could be fun.
Yeah. But that's not how Sarah Palin did it.
No. Oh, and through our travels, I'm a truck driver. Through our travels, we've noticed, you know, we've not really seen that many Obama, Biden signs.
Yeah.
But we haven't really seen that many McCain Palin signs either.
You ought to come to Georgia.
Well, we were on a run from Chicago to Georgia there for a long time.
Yeah.
But now we're running teams, so we're East Coast to West Coast, so we're staying all the way across.
Well, you know, I'm glad you're working.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I encourage others, you know, if you can't find a job, get in the trucking business because, you know, as long as people need to eat and you're hauling a reefer, you got a job.
Right. Now, a lot of people don't understand what you mean by reefer, so you better explain it, Eileen.
Refrigerated trailer.
Right, exactly.
Because they're short, you know, truck drivers.
Yeah.
The trucking industry is.
But,
so it's a good field to go into.
But you don't have to cover your own diesel or gasoline expense, I take it.
Oh, no, we work for a company, a very good company. Takes very good care of us.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad to know that occasionally I can get a phone call from someone who is doing okay and who will indulge my fantasy of a $150,000 clothing allowance.
that would be a lot of fun.
I can't help it, Eileen. I just think it would be a whole lot of fun to walk into, some really great shops in L.A. or New York or Chicago and just say, let me have one of those, and I'll have two of those, and give me that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Eileen, thanks for checking in.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, you too. I'm sorry. I know. That's my inner Republican talking, I guess, my inner greed head. But it's fun. I'm some of the best times I've ever had is going to a really nice men's store and picking out one of those just butter soft cashmere black turtleneck sweaters and just bringing it home and looking at it and touching,
locking yourself in the bedroom with it for an hour. It's the Julia
Roberts.
It
doesn't happen that often, it's just that freaky Homo sapiens thing about me.
Glad you said sapiens. That pretty woman, Julia Roberts, shopping spree scene with Richard Gere saying, sucking up, more sucking up. We need lots more sucking
lots
up.
Lots more sucking up, yeah. Well, Eileen knows this, and I'm sure most people do. If you want to live like a Republican, vote for a Democrat. Very simple. Alan is calling from Houston, listening on Sirius. Hey, Alan.
Hey. Are you there?
Yes, sir. I think I am. If I'm not here, I'm somewhere.
All right. Well, I also drive for a trucking company, the third largest in the company, that the last part sounds a lot like what Sarah likes to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, we make around mid-50s to mid-60s every year.
Right.
And we're doing fine.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
It would be nice to go shopping and have somebody else pay for it, but that doesn't happen. So instead today I tape my shoe up so the sole doesn't fall off. But that's all beside the point.
Oh, I know about taping up the sole of your shoe. Lord, do I know about that.
Right. It's just about being broke.
Yeah.
My sweetheart, I am a gay trucker, and my companion for 8 years has not been able to get health care and is currently at home in the 12th of Friday will be 13 weeks of not being able to hold food down with cancer. And it's pretty much eating our lunch. But, you know, whenever you look at the healthcare situation with John McCain, he wants you to go out and spend $12,000 or $17,000, and then he'll give you five back taxes, and it'll basically be $3,500 off.
Yeah, wouldn't
that be? You'll lose it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you. I don't have that kind of money. you stand to lose your health care where you're working. And Obama says, let's get some affordable health care for everybody.
Yeah.
Then on top of it, you go to any other topic, whether it be the economy, whether it be abortion, reasonable gun reform rights, whether it be just pick a topic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have one topic in my mind that McCain has a better plan.
Now,
not to mention, he reminds me of Cotton, the grandfather of the little boy on King of the Hill, the old, far grumpy, half the time out of his mind, can't walk around hobbly guy.
Right,
and he's running with, and you know, they say 30-60% chance the first 2 years
he'll
be gone, and you have the idiot come take his place.
Yeah,
who doesn't know anything. Why would anybody still be thinking about voting for them? And I have an answer. I've called 43 people on my phone that I talk to on a regular basis or not, and have asked every one of them to go out and vote, register to vote.
Right.
42 of them are now registered to vote.
And the 43rd?
And the 43rd says that they just don't care. And I said, okay, then I don't want to hear you complain.
Yeah.
My point is this. I've talked to each of these people several times, and the main concern was he might be a terrorist. Or
God.
The biggest thing is my mother... still, she says, I'd vote for him in a heartbeat. I'm just afraid of the terrorist thing. And I've talked with her several times and have not given up yet. My grandmother says, we've always voted Republican. And I said, do you want 20% of your Medicare to go bye-bye at the beginning of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want, you know, I just went through Social Security and all the stuff. And I said, why would you still vote Republican when they're going to sink you? You've already lost so much because of Bush and what he's done.
Right.
Then on top of that, you know, my dad, who's been racist since I was little bitty, we've had one guy who was black come to the house who was a buddy of his. But other than that guy, just can't stand black people. And guess who he's decided he's going to vote for?
Who?
Barack. He says, we cannot take four more years of this ding-dong we got now. So with all that having been said, why in the world would you still think about voting for somebody who has nothing to offer you? If you're an average citizen, an average person,
you know, Alan,
I can't come up with one.
I can't either. As you're talking, you know, I can almost picture your family members, all these people that you have to deal with, and they're very familiar. They're not stereotypes; they're archetypes, and. I'm hoping that your grandfather, I believe you said, or your grandmother, the one who said she or he, you know, just can't stand black folk, but is going to vote for Barack Obama. That's what I'm talking about. I understand. I'm not going to come on the air and bust up on your grandparent that has that attitude. That is a process of enlightenment that has to occur and will not occur. I mean, there are people in this country of a certain age for whom that enlightenment about the connectivity between the races will never occur. It's just not going to happen. It can't happen because of, you know, what their life experience has been. And that's a shame. It's really, I mean, it's a heartbreaker to me. It really is a heartbreaker. So, I hope, though, that maybe in actually casting a vote for someone who is not white, it'll open up something in the grandparent you're talking about where they will come out of that voting booth and there'll be this moment where they'll realize what they just did. I guess I need to up the B complex that I've been taking. I've already got chartreuse tea, but I'll tell you what, that's about the only thing sometimes I think gets me through. Is the worry? I got a couple of emails tonight from somebody in England who is very concerned about the state of affairs in this country and what's going to happen on November 4th, whether or not we're going to figure out a way to escape this mess. And that means not just winning the election. We have to win it. We being Democrats, we have to win it by a margin great enough to compensate or accommodate the theft that the Republicans have engineered against normal Americans for at least the past 8 years and possibly longer. Just in state after state, the lawsuits that are being filed by these swine to not just to challenge new registrations, but to do whatever they can do to intimidate voters. And the thing that's interesting to me, and I'm going to just say it, what's interesting to me is how many of these so-called poll watchers, these white Republicans, who think that black folk can be intimidated, and these white poll watchers go into predominantly black precincts on election day. This, you know, this has happened several times. I wonder what's going to happen this time. And try to intimidate black folk. I've said it before many, many times that knowing what I know now at this point in my life, had I been born an African American, I never would have made it to this age. I would have been executed for mass murder, or I would have been in an insane asylum, or just in prison. Because I understand the tidal forces inside of me. And it's the damnedest thing. I've had several black male friends who have just ground on them, explained to me what it's like to be a black man in America. And, you know, they've made the effort. And as I sit and listen to the stories, you know, they listen to my stories, I listen to their stories. And as I listen to their stories, I just sit there and think, Jesus Christ. I mean, I couldn't do that. You know, I couldn't do that. I could not do that. There's no way. So knowing that, I just wonder what makes a white person think, well, I'm going to get up this morning on election day and I'm going to take my clipboard and my white self into the ghetto and I'm going to stand at a predominantly black precinct and I'm going to intimidate white voters or black voters. What makes a white person think that? That he, mostly it's a he, can do that. if I was one of those black voters and I saw this pale-faced sucker standing outside and I come out of the school or the church or whatever it is after I cast my vote and this guy comes up to me and says, could you show me some photo ID? I'd probably pull out a gun and shoot him right between his goddamn eyes. I mean, just blam! But see, that speaks volumes about me, not about anything else. Thanks to the crew tonight who assisted in this production of this program, our engineer Ian Huff, our podcast manager and technical advisor Ben Birch, who during the program sent me an email that said that newest Malloy video will probably be up tomorrow. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Our economic policy advisor is Bruce Enberg. And our two ethical advisors for this program are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. What else we got? Oh, don't forget, our own engineer and sometimes associate producer, Ian Huff, will begin hosting Unreported News at 8 a.m. Pacific time or West Coast time, whatever. Every Sunday, starting this Sunday, so that'll be 11 a.m. Eastern time. So be sure to tune in this Sunday and give him a shout out or call him up and really make him nervous. Do something. Show him some love, right? We got time for another call. Billy is calling from South Carolina.
Hi.
Listening on Sirius. Hey, Billy, guess what? You got 30 seconds, pal. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That woman up there in Pittsburgh, that makes no sense.
No, of course not.
By me being from South Carolina, we'd had two incidents about a black man doing something to a white person. It's Susan Smith, and this lady said the black guy killed her child. Mm-hmm. Why would he cut her and steal her money, then look over and see the McCain Palin, and then she doesn't see which way he goes? And then
yeah, Billy, let me tell you a secret. All the white people know this, but apparently black folks are just haven't tuned in yet to the truth. The woman is lying. The woman is a liar. All right, Billy, thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. Thanks to everybody. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.